It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syria's future, the topic of multilateral talks in Vienna. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry takes part in more talks on Syria this week. The talks in Vienna involve Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Iran for the first time. Speaking at Washington Wednesday, Mr. Kerry said the latest round of talks represents the most promising opportunity in years for reaching a political solution after nearly 5 years of civil war. He said there is a basis of general agreement.
We all agree that a victory by Daesh or any other terrorist group absolutely has to be prevented. We all agree that it's imperative to save the state of Syria and the institutions on which it is built and preserve a united and secular Syria. We all agree that we have to create the conditions for the return of the displaced persons and the refugees. We agree on the right of the Syrian people to choose their leadership through transparent, free, and fair elections with a new constitution and protections for all minorities in the country.
He said the U.S. is taking a two-pronged approach, diplomacy as well as intensifying the campaign against the Islamic State. There's political uncertainty in Tanzania following that Southern African nation's Sunday election. Wednesday, the main opposition candidate, Edward Lowassa, rejected the results, citing alleged fraud. At a news conference in Dar es Salaam, he called on the National Electoral Commission to stop announcing results. Mr. Lowassa said the process has been compromised following alleged collusion between the commission, members of the ruling CCM party. The latest official results show Mr. Lowassa trailing CCM candidate John Magufuli 59-40%. His rejection follows the annulment of the vote in Tanzania's Zanzibar region because of what are called gross violations in the voting process. This is VOA News. The United States says it has no intention of pursuing long-term, large-scale ground combat operations like in Afghanistan or Iraq in its stepped-up offensive against Islamic State targets in Iraq and Syria. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter spoke Wednesday.
The overall mission of the U.S. forces in Iraq is to enable, by equipping, training, advising, assisting, capable and motivated local forces rather than to substitute for them. We know from experience that that's the only way to make defeat of ISIL stick.
A White House spokesman said the U.S. retains the ability to conduct limited operations with partners as opportunities allow. Meanwhile, U.S. soldiers have begun training units of Niger's army at the edge of the Sahara Desert in what a U.S. official called a new wave of military support for African states battling Boko Haram militants. According to the official, more training will follow for national armies in Cameroon, Nigeria, and Chad. Some 40 U.S. soldiers are providing 8 weeks of training to some 150 Nigerian troops. The U.S. says it has no intention of ending patrol missions across international waters and airspace. Washington dispatched a warship near disputed South China Sea islets and reefs in the Spratly Islands claimed by Beijing. China summoned the U.S. ambassador to deliver a formal protest over the incident Tuesday. John Kirby is a U.S. State Department spokesman.
Freedom of the seas is a fundamental principle which must be protected. And that's one of the reasons why the U.S. Navy exists. And operations in international waters are just that. They're operations in international waters. They're not meant to be, nor should they be perceived to be by anybody as provocative.
And editorially, the Communist Party-run Global Times said the U.S. patrol mission amounted to harassment and urged the Chinese government to take steps to show it's not frightened to fight a war with the U.S. Germany's interior minister has sharply criticized Austria for sending migrants and refugees to its border without prior notice and under cover of night. Thomas de Maizière said Austria's handling of refugees is, quote, out of order, while the number of migrants entering Germany has risen significantly in recent days. Italy has rejected Tunisia's extradition request for a suspect in the March terror attack on the Bardo Museum in Tunis that killed 21 people. A court in Milan ruled there is no guarantee Abdel Majid Toul would not face the death penalty if sent back to Tunisia. Toul, a Moroccan, was arrested in May, denied involvement in the Tunis attack. Nepal's parliament elected Bidya Bhandari as the country's first female president. The former defense minister served as a deputy leader of the ruling Communist Party. Overwhelming vote, she became a leading political figure after the death of her husband, former Communist leader Madame Bhandari, in 1993. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Thursday, October 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military says it rescued hundreds more from Boko Haram captivity.
The unit of the 28th Task Force Brigade of the Nigerian Army carried out a raid on two suspected Boko Haram terrorist camps and rescued 338 men and women as well as children.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is spokesman for the Nigerian military. Ghana's Electoral Commission considers whether its voter list has been compromised. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court issues a 30-day suspended sentence to the Prosecutor General. And South Sudan's government responds to an African Union report accusing the warring parties of war crimes.
What I said, that it was not a government policy, but there are some individuals within the National Army who targeted some ethnic groups.
Barnaba Merah Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. Scientists may have found a way to prevent the transmission of malaria, and Freedom House says worldwide internet freedom keeps eroding. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military says it rescued 338 hostages, mostly children and women, from two suspected Boko Haram camps near the northeastern Sambisa forest. Hundreds more Boko Haram hostages have been rescued this year. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman says, unfortunately, the latest rescue did not include the 219 Chibok schoolgirls kidnapped more than a year ago. But he said the military is working assiduously to ensure the girls are rescued safely and reunited with their families. Usman called on Nigerians to join forces with the military as it endeavors to fulfill President Buhari's request to defeat Boko Haram by December this year.
The units of the 28th Task Force Brigade of the Nigerian Army on Tuesday carried out a raid on two suspected Boko Haram terrorist camps at Manawase and Bulajiling along Bita Dambua Road by the fringes of Sambisa Forest. They were able to kill 30 Boko Haram terrorists and abducted 338 men and women as well as children. 8 men and 192 children, the other one were women.
Most of them women, you said. Could it be that they are the Chibok girls that were seized more than a year ago?
You know, the issue of the abducted Chibok school girls has been raising a lot of concern to all peace-loving people in this world. And we are working assiduously to ensure that they are rescued safely and united with their family. However, the present rescued women and children were not among the abducted Chibok girls. Hopefully, we are going to rescue them in due course.
Your military has claimed many successes in recent weeks or months. This on the heel of the president's deadline, which is coming at the end of the year. Can you assure Nigerians that you are going to eventually weaken and if not even destroy Boko Haram?
Absolutely, I'm going to assure Nigerians. Invariably, if you are going by standard or indices, the issue of Boko Haram terrorism and insurgency, within the last 6 years or a year ago, you can safely that they have been defeated because they have been denied the freedom of action, denied the freedom of movement, and created their capability to fight anymore. So answering your question, basically, I want Nigerians and all well-meaning people to have confidence and trust in the military that we are going to deliver. However, I want people to understand, actually, yeah, it is not the army alone that wins a war, but the nation does. So it's a clarion call that all aspects, all strata of Nigerian society should also mobilize and do the best they could, you know, to support the fight against terrorism and insurgency so that we can have a hitch-free unitary period and beyond.
President Barack Obama has promised help. Is your military benefiting from the help that the president promised?
One thing I want you to understand, there is a long-standing relationship between the American military and the Nigerian military, and that relationship has been sustained over time. Even at that, even before this assistance, there is a collaboration in terms of sharing of information and, of course, military training. And we have even witnessed renewed effort in that regard, you know, from the American government. So it's something that is welcome development, and we hope to also benefit immensely from it.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A five-member panel of the Ghana Electoral Commission will begin receiving presentations today, Thursday, from political parties and other stakeholders who are demanding a new voter list for next year's general election. The main opposition New Patriotic Party, the NPP, recently petitioned the Electoral Commission expressing concern about the credibility of the voter list. The party claimed the voter list is compromised and could undermine the credibility of the next election. Sylvia Anno, spokesperson of the Electoral Commission, tells reporter Peter Clarty that the five-member panel will listen to all sides and report to the Electoral Commission for a decision.
The Electoral Commission believes in the capabilities of the panel members selected to man the forum that is being held today. The eminent Ghanaians who are ready to work for the Electoral Commission, and they were selected based on the fact that they are authorities in their own fields of endeavor.
After their sitting, they will present a report. What happens to the report once it's done?
The findings and recommendations of the panel will be presented to the Electoral Commission for a final decision to be made. And then it will be communicated to the various publics, the stakeholders, the political parties, and then the general public at large.
Now, we heard reports that the New Patriotic Party and other stakeholders who have been calling for a new register say that two members of the panel, or some members of the panel, have publicly opposed their call for a new register. As such, the panel might not be necessarily impartial, like the Electoral Commission wants to present to Ghanaians. What is your reaction to such criticism?
I indicated earlier on that the Electoral Commission believes in the capabilities of these individuals, and that is the reason for their selection, you know, to be members of the panel.
So what necessitated this establishing of this panel to look into concerns expressed by these political parties about the voter register, if indeed the Electoral Commission has every confidence about the credibility of the voter list in the first place?
The New Patriotic Party presented a petition to the Electoral Commission some time back, a few months ago, on the status of the current voters register. We had some reservations about the current voters register, and that necessitated that catalyzed it. The commission had an IPAC meeting, the Party Advisory Committee meeting, and indicated that all political parties, including stakeholders, faith-based organizations, should make proposals to the Electoral Commission on the current voters register. And the Commission gave it a deadline within which all the parties should submit the proposals. Thankfully, the Commission received some proposals, and the forum would look at the various proposals that have been submitted to the Commission.
Sylvia Anna is spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. South Sudan's government is welcoming the report of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on the South Sudan conflict. Foreign Minister Banaba Merau Benjamin says the report will help the country hunt down the perpetrators of human rights violations during the violence, which began in December 2013. Benjamin says the South Sudan government is willing to implement the report's recommendations.
The Obasanjo's human rights report has come out clearly that there is no genocide in South Sudan, because some independent bodies have been running around singing the issue of genocide in South Sudan. There's nothing like that in the report. Accountability will be there. You know, there is hybrid court. The hybrid court is going to be formed according to the agreement. And this hybrid court is going to be composed by the African Union lawyers and the government of the Republic of South Sudan lawyers. So to form that, you must release the report so that the hybrid court, they know what areas they are going
to make accountability.
And how would you react to the one of the recommendations in the report that it looks like there was no coup in Juba? There was just a disagreement among the presidential guard that sparked fighting all over the town.
But you know what happened? This was an attempted coup. So we are going now to make it clear that there was an attempted coup in Juba. And any constitutional government will not entertain exchange of authority through the use of force. That is unconstitutional. And the government has got the sovereign authority to protect the sovereignty of the country and to protect the constitution.
But the report said there was no any signs to prove that there was a coup attempt.
Well, there's a lot of signs. What would have made the soldiers to rebel when they failed to take over the government and run away and turn into a rebellion? I think the evidence is there. Secondly, there were pronouncements by the leaders who were leading the coup. They are recorded in the BBC. Maybe in Voice of America you don't have them. But the leader of SPLM-IO was saying that by midday they will take over the state house. Where do you take over a state house by force if it is not a coup? So there's a lot of evidence which will come out.
I've been talking to you on several occasions, and one time when I interviewed you on some of the allegations that were coming out that some ethnic groups were being targeted in Juba, you denied it. But this report is saying it looks like there was a pre-planned move to target specific people from certain ethnic groups during the fighting.
I didn't deny that. What I said, that it was not a government policy, but there are some individuals within the National Army who targeted some ethnic groups. That is true, but it is not a policy of the government.
Reconciliation comes with a responsibility, and the responsibility of reconciling people is based on telling the truth. Is your government accepting this report the way it is now?
Yes, we have agreed. We were not opposed for the report to be released because there's nothing we as a government are afraid of, because that will also help the government to enhance reconciliation among its citizens.
Barnum Admiral Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister. He was speaking to John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan In Focus program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. The time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The African Union Commission of Inquiry report on the conflict in South Sudan makes mention of South Sudanese who fled the conflict to Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia. The report said thousands of ethnic Nuer were killed in the first 3 days of the conflict. Many Nuer fled to UN camps in Juba at the start of the conflict and are still there. They told VOA fellow Tito Justin they hope the report will help reconcile South Sudanese and allow those who have spent nearly 2 years under UN protection to resume normal lives.
Kobong Kobong is one of the leaders of the internally displaced persons or IDPs living in the UN camp in Juba. A member of the Nuer ethnic group, he recalls his desperate escape to a UN base in Juba when fighting broke out on the night of December 15, 2013.
I escaped narrowly. My house was in Minisaba. One of my nephew was killed in my house. And then I ran for my life to the enemy. And the one who was killed was not a soldier, just a student under my care, which indicates that the fighting spread from military to innocent civilians.
Kobom says it's time for those who killed innocent civilians to be brought to justice. He says the report will help South Sudan to move a step closer to that goal. 19-year-old Nyankwar Peter Kwong was separated from her parents immediately after the conflict broke out in Juba. She had to interrupt her education for a year and a half because of the conflict. Peter is now preparing to sit for her final secondary school examination in the Army's Protection of Civilian Camp in Juba. She says what she wants more than anything now is for peace to be restored in South Sudan.
I want them to stop killing the citizens for no good reason, because it's not good. The fighting is supposed to be between the soldiers. It's not supposed to be killing the citizens for no good reason. That's what I want.
The AU report, which was compiled by a team led by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, has been ready since last year. It was first supposed to be released at an AU summit in January, but was delayed then and has been put off many times since without an explanation from the Pan-African body. Kobong says he and other IDPs
are very happy that what we have been waiting for be released today. And I think the next step is for the law to take its course.
The report indicates what many have been saying since the conflict began, that many of the killings were ethnically motivated. Kobong says he and the other IDPs are now hoping for justice and for peace to be restored so that they can leave the UN camps and go home. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
In a landmark ruling delivered yesterday, Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court slapped Prosecutor General Johannes Tumana with a suspended 30-day sentence on condition he issues certificates for private prosecution in two high-profile cases. Tumana is accused of defying rulings from the High Court and the Supreme Court, compelling him to issue the certificates. Attorney Charles Warara of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, representing the child allegedly raped by Kerekeri, says the ruling is significant.
Basically, Mr. Tumana has been compelled by the order of the Constitutional Court. What essentially transpired was that he is the one who came to the Constitutional Court asking for certain relief, which relief was refused. And basically, he was asking for the Constitutional Court to endorse that he has some independence. The Constitutional Court refused to give that endorsement for that application. And then he actually observed that he was in contempt of three court orders that had been issued prior to him coming to court, and that he had done nothing in terms of obeying those court orders. So consequently, the court naturally came to the conclusion that he must obey those court orders. He cannot come to court when he's also disobeying the orders of the court. Then they went on to issue a court order that stated categorically what they expect him to do.
How significant is this?
Well, I think it's a serious and a very positive development for our case, because we've been hoping that one day we'll get such a judgment where the court would definitively state that he must obey these court orders.
Attorney Charles Warara is a member of lawyers of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. He was speaking to Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Scientists may have hit on a way to prevent the transmission of malaria with a Nobel Prize-winning drug originally developed to treat parasitic illnesses. The drug is called ivermectin, and it's currently being tested in parts of Africa. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
Ivermectin has completely revolutionized the treatment of worm diseases like river blindness and elephantiasis, and could lead to their eradication if it's used effectively. Now, it appears ivermectin may be effective against the spread of malaria. Vector biologist Brian Foy of Colorado State University led a study in Burkina Faso that found a reduction in childhood malaria when the drug was given to adults in the region.
We don't think this is any sort of magic bullet, but it adds another arsenal to the control strategy to control both malaria as well as the other neglected tropical diseases, the worms or the parasitic diseases that are in these villages.
The ongoing trial involves giving a single dose of ivermectin once every 3 weeks to the majority of people in four villages. Small children didn't receive the drug, but the treatment blocked transmission of malaria in 16% of children, the disease's main victims. Foy says ivermectin, even at low levels, is toxic to disease-carrying mosquitoes. The drug's unique action targets the mosquito, not the parasite that causes malaria. For this reason, researchers in the U.S. and Thailand believe ivermectin might help control transmission of a drug-resistant form of malaria in Southeast Asia. For now, Foy is cautious about claiming that ivermectin holds the key to stopping malaria transmission. He says more studies are needed.
We probably need to do it in a much bigger area and probably into different places that have different intensities of malaria transmission, and hopefully really prove that this idea is robust and can be used in many different areas.
Since the late 1980s, an estimated 1 billion doses of ivermectin have been distributed around the world. Foy, who presented his findings at a meeting of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene, wraps up the current trial at the end of next month before moving on to the next phase of testing. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Internet freedom around the world keeps eroding, according to a new report by the independent watchdog group Freedom House. The organization says that for the fifth year in a row, more nations are censoring information online and demanding companies and individuals take down content or face retribution. Alberto Pimienta has the story.
Freedom House says in places like China, Russia, and Iran, posting content on the internet that offends the government can land you in jail.
They tend to arrest users for writing about human rights in opposition.
In its annual Freedom of the Net report, the organization says China is still the worst offender. A Chinese university professor was jailed for life for questioning government policies online.
China's definitely been more aggressive in the last couple of years under Xi Jinping in terms of censorship. They've blocked Google, they've blocked Gmail and other Google services. They've arrested more online activists.
In Syria, bloggers risk being killed. In Iran, the third worst performer, despite improved online access, conservative factions in the country's leadership keep a tight control. Despite the censorship, people find ways to connect, especially when it comes to social media sites like Facebook and Twitter. However, these are blocked in China and Iran.
It is actually because of their desire to connect to these popular media platforms. It is that they're seeking circumvention tools and they're seeking the use of VPNs so then they can bypass censorship.
But how a person uses social media in countries like Iran can have serious consequences. A young Iranian cartoonist was sentenced to 12 years in prison for this post on Facebook depicting lawmakers as animals. Alberto Pimienta for VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ullman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Defending champions Nigeria Golden Eaglets signaled their intention to retain their title when they overwhelmed Australia 6-0 at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Viña del Mar in Chile on Wednesday. A hat-trick by striker Victor Osimhen, along with goals scored by Samuel Chukwueze, Kelechi Nwakali, and Eddie Deong Essien, confirmed the Golden Eaglets' place in the quarterfinals this coming weekend. Today, Thursday, Mali tackled North Korea in Talca. In hockey, Kenya outclassed Tanzania 7-0 as Egypt overpowered Nigeria 8-0 in the men's contest at the Africa 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic hockey qualifiers in Randburg, South Africa on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Zimbabwe play Namibia, Tanzania face Nigeria as South Africa play Kenya in the women's game, while Zimbabwe play Ghana and South Africa engage Namibia in the men's contest. Turning to handball, Tunisian defending champions Club Africains dismissed Egypt's Sporting Alexandria 29-23 in the men's semifinals at the Africa Handball Club Championships in Nador, Morocco on Wednesday. Egypt's Zamalek required extra time to pip Tunisia's Esperance 34-33 in the other semifinal. In the women's semifinals, Angolan defending champions Primero de Agosto overcame Ivory Coast's Africa Sports 35-26, while Angola's Petro Atletico beat Cameroon's FAP 28-20 in the other semifinals. Finally, in Olympic news, talented refugees from all over the world will compete at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. The International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach disclosed at the recent United Nations General Assembly in New York in the United States of America. Bach says the top-level athletes who are currently refugees will be identified and will be welcome to the Olympic Games to compete under the Olympic flag. Should any win a gold medal, the Olympic anthem will be played. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Main opposition candidate Edward Lowassa has rejected the results of Tanzania's presidential election, citing alleged fraud. That is it for this Thursday, October 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good Thursday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.